hurried to the field before the water got hot. And the story was told about my carrying a jar of water to my father one afternoon when it was hot. I was on my way and I tripped and fell and cut my chin on a rock. But I got up with my jug of water and carried it on to my daddy because I knew he needed a drink of water. And when I got there and he unwrapped the water, the jar was broken. And I had to go back home and get another jar of water for my daddy because the weather was so hot.
What about the bowl?
Yes, the bowl weevil could ruin the crop. If the winter was real, real cold, it helped to prevent the boll weevil from being so bad the next year. But if the weather was warm, the boll weevil got an early start. And the boll weevil was probably the biggest hindrance to the farmer in raising his crop. They would puncture the bolls, and they would not open and produce the cotton that they should. Many things were done in later years as poisoning the cotton, either with sacks. Many of the farmer and his sons would cover fields with poison by going down the road holding a sack of poison in each hand and jarring the sacks as they went along and poisoning the cotton. Later on, airplanes were brought in to dust large farms with many acres of cotton. The eradication of the boll weevil came about after many, many years and a lot of struggling by the farmer and the people who were trying to help eradicate the boll weevil.
How did your mother's role?
My mother's role was probably the hardest role of all because a woman's work was never done on the farm. Her work began as early in the day as the father's, and she did all the housework in general and was responsible for the garden. And the garden had to be large enough to produce enough foodstuff for the whole family for a whole year. She was responsible for the yards, whether they had flowers or grass or just swept with brush brooms. She did a lot of sewing for the house. Curtains, rugs, quilts, sewing for the family, and shirts and dresses.
How did she make the quilt for her?
In the country, people never threw anything away. She made rugs from old dresses and strips of cloth that she would cut up from sheets or bedspreads or pillowcases. She would cut these a certain width and would sew them together in strips until she had huge piles of strips, and she would braid these rugs into long braids until she thought she had a braid long enough to form the size rug that she wanted. And then she would get needle and thread and sew these braids together. And rugs were really needed in homes because people did not have grass around their houses and much mud was trapped in the houses. And if rugs were at the door, people could clean their feet and not bring so much dirt into the house.
What about your father's room?
My father's role, his principal role, of course, was raising crops, but this was the major part of his work for a year. But outside of the farm work, he had other major jobs also. The cutting of wood for kitchen stove was used all year round, and wood for the fireplaces during the winter. Then he had the job of looking after the livestock. Livestock had to be fed, watered, and looked after every day, regardless of the weather, regardless of illnesses, regardless of visiting. And many times the father might be a hunter or a fisherman, and he could spend a lot of his time bringing in extra food into the family by doing this. The father many times is the disciplinarian in the family, and especially if there were a lot of boys. And he also had the job of giving out jobs or chores that were to be done by other people in the family. A lot of the hoeing and trimming of fruit trees, looking after the orchard, was done by the father in the family. Carrying cotton to Virginia, going to town to sell or buy food products, groceries, was the role of the father. Many families only made a trip once a month to buy groceries, or once a week to buy groceries or sell whatever products they might be selling to the store.
What were some of the highlights of living on the farm?
One of the highlights that I remember was when we got electricity. I believe I was in the seventh grade when electricity came to our community. The electric company that we had was not connected with TVA, but it was Alabama Power Company. And it was hard to get a power company to put a power line through a community unless a good many people signed up to use the electricity. And for the electricity to come to our community, people signed up whether or not they would use the electricity when it came through. Then, if enough people signed up, the company would start working for a right-of-way. And the right-of-way would have to cross farmland. So the electric line did not follow the road. It came in more of a straight line, as straight a line as possible. So where there were curves in the road, then the power line would cut across farmland. And the owner of the land would have to sign giving a right-of-way to the power company before they would build the line. And when there finally was enough signers and a right-of-way was given for the power to come into our community, we were very excited because we did not have refrigerators or washing machines or things like that because of this lack of power. And the first night that I remember having electricity in the home, my sister and I got our books and we moved to the back of the room to do our homework because we had always had to sit close to a lamp with somebody's paper in our light where we couldn't see out of light. And the weather was cold, and our parents would let us sit back there and do our homework, and let us get back up close to the fire so we wouldn't get very cold. But when the power was available, then people began to want to buy things that would make life easier on us, such as refrigerators, freezers, radios. One of the most exciting days of my life when I was a teenager was when my parents went to shopping and came back with a refrigerator, a big table model, a big floor model radio, and a living room seat. I thought that was just about as grand a thing as anybody living on the farm can have.
Any more? Okay.
One memorable thing that I remember was when we got a pressure canner. All canning had to be done in big boilers and cooked. To preserve the stuff for canning as beans. Sometimes green beans were cooked outside in the wash pot and then filled up in the jars and kept. But when pressure canners came out, my mother bought one. And this pressure canner would hold 7 quarts of vegetables at a time. And the beans were heated on the stove and filled into the jars and put into the pressure cooker. And the lid was put on the cooker and a band was put around it to protect it from the pressure. And as the cooker was heating. And my job was to watch that pressure canner, because if it got above 15 pound pressure, so the escape valve would go off and your jars might break or the food might come out of the jars. But to us it was such a wonderful thing, because the 7 jars did not have to stay under pressure very long until the food would be hot enough to be preserved. And that summer we not only canned all the beans that we would need all winter for ourselves, but we canned beans for our neighbors. That year we canned over 100 quarts of beans. Another memorable time that I remember was when the high school where I had graduated from got a canning plant. I cannot remember now why the canning plant was put in our particular school, but we used many, many tomatoes. Tomatoes were used for sauces and for soups and many things when you're cooking. And this plant canned the tomatoes in cans like you might find at the grocery store. And we helped with the canning ourselves under the direction of the vo-ag teacher at the school. And it was such a wonderful thing to us to gather all the tomatoes and wash them and carry them to this plant. And in just a half a day's time, we would have all the cans of tomatoes that we could use for a whole year. We thought that was something wonderful.
We're about to get you back.
That was a memorable time to me. I started driving when we would go somewhere to visit, and as we would come home, I would sit in the front seat and ask my daddy if I could hold the steering wheel and keep the car on the road, and he would tell me I could. And then when I got 15, I started driving just short distances. And by the time I was 16, I had studied a book on driving, and I went to take the written test for my driver's license. And just a few weeks after I was 16, I had my driver's license. And I thought it was a thrilling thing because no one else my age had license to drive a car. And some school project that we had going on at the high school needed me to be there one night. And we were busy in the crop year, and my parents did not have time to take me. And I was so thrilled when my mother told me to take the car and go myself. The school was only about 3 miles away. I thought that was about the grandest thing that I could do. And I was so nervous that when I got home, I could hardly put the brakes on and stop the car when I got in the yard.
Now, I know about Poppy. Do you have any Poppy's ever been driving?
Probably affected my life more than I knew that it did. My father always kept up with the news. I never remember when I was a child and we did not have a newspaper in our home. And my father kept up with politics, the weather, and things like that over battery radios that we were finally able to buy. At that time, to be able to vote, you had to pay a poll tax. Men and women had to pay the poll tax. And if you were not registered and had not paid your poll tax, of course, your name would not be on the list and you could not vote. And one of the things that I remember was at some important election, my father was working at the election. He was taken to run the election. And the election was not in our community. You had to go somewhere else to do your voting. And a lot of people were going to vote because the election was important. And this black man who lived in another community went to the polls to vote. And they asked him if he had paid his poll tax, and he said he had, and he had the proof that he had, but they would not let him vote. And my father said that was not right, because he had paid his poll tax, just like we had paid our poll tax, but he was not allowed to vote. Most of the people in the community here were Democrats, but there was one family that was a Republican, and that was the only Republican that I knew of living in the community. Farmers felt like that Democrats did more for them than the Republicans did.
So did your father support the media program?
Yes, he did. And when he was given his allotment of cotton to plant, when the people came to measure, they never found that my daddy had planted more than he was supposed to have. And he used fertilizer, and that was another thing that some people did not do. They were not using enough fertilizer. They would not move their crops around. I remember when my brother was in high school and was a member of the FFA. His project was to show the difference between fertilizing crops and not fertilizing crops. So that I talked with my father, and my father allowed my brother to plant a corn patch to the side of the road where people could see it. And half of the corn was fertilized with nitric soda, and the other half wasn't. And signs were put up so that people who went along the road would know that this was an experiment that was going on. And when it got time to harvest the corn that had had the fertilizer added to it had 3 and 4 big ears of corn per stalk. And the other half that had not had fertilizer might have 1 big ear and 2 or 3 small ears called nubbins.
Did that convince all people?
Yes, it convinced many, many people because there was proof right before their eyes.
Did the new deal, were there any more programs or
I only know that some, that the New Deal was to help keep prices up when the market was, when the crops were poor, and was to help store corn so that, or store cotton so that markets would not be flooded and the prices dropped so low, and that some people were paid for not raising certain crops. Outside of that, I guess I probably was too young to know exactly how much the New Deal affected people. But they did bring in more soil conservation courses and keeping the soil from eroding away became important to the farmers. I do remember once that a section of our land that was real rocky and was not very good for farming was planted with seeding pine, and they grew quite well in that area, and the trees were only cut when people began talking about the gypsy moth coming into the pine forest.
What about kudzu?
Kudzu was something that people thought would solve a lot of problems, but it turned out to be a problem itself. Kudzu was a good ground cover and would keep the soil from eroding, but it was hard to destroy. It would continue to grow and spread and would become a nuisance. I can think when I was 12 or 13 years old, we got some kudzu to go by the side of our porch, and we built a scaffold for the kudzu to run on so that it would make a shade from the evening sun on our porch. And it worked very well there, except we had to keep it trimmed all the time or it would take the whole yard. And sometimes runners would get under the house and would go from one side of the house, under the house, and out the other side of the house. And the only way that kudzu could be killed was by letting cattle graze on it until they take it down.
What about the home demonstration thing?
Okay, home demonstrations, clubs where a boon to community. Any community that wanted to could support a home demonstration club, and this was for the Winterman community. I believe that meetings were once a month, and the meetings were held usually at someone's house. The leaders came out to teach the women in the community better ways of doing things, better methods of canning, better ways of sewing, better gardening practices, anything that seemed to be a problem or that would be of help to the people in the community. The home demonstration club could do it if you had, even if you had a specific problem, and they could help. And they taught families how to eat a more varied diet to get the vitamins and minerals that they needed. They could teach you better ways of doing things in your home that would help the whole thing.
What about childhood diseases or illnesses you can name?
Childhood diseases were hard to handle many times because of lack of medical facilities and lack of money to take people to the hospital when they needed to go. In our community, in the spring, a clinic would be held to give people who needed typhoid and diphtheria shots. Some of the shots had to be given in rounds of two and maybe three. So announcements would be posted letting the community know when the doctor and the nurse would be there to give the shots. It was up to the parents to be sure that they got their children there. So some parents did not take the time to get their children immunized. Sometimes the shots were given at the same time people were hauling cotton in the field, and then when you got your shot and your arm got sore and you worked in the field, it made it even worse. So many times children did not want to take the shots for this reason. The doctors made house calls and any community doctor seemed to have some type of disease that he could handle very, very well. The doctor we had did not live in our community, but he was known as being a good pneumonia doctor. And the doctor, of course, always delivered the babies. And this meant that with the wide area that country doctors covered, there was not much time to give personal attention to the huge number of patients that we might have. Whooping cough, measles, mumps were all diseases that the family usually took care of themselves. Measles needed to be handled carefully because bright light when you had measles could often cause bad eyesight. Another thing I remember, when electricity came through, before electricity came through, the high school where I went to school had a generator. that provided electricity for the lights in the school. And the school had a windmill, and the generator was used to provide electricity to the windmill pump, so that when the wind did not blow enough to pump water for us to drink, then the generator could be used to pump the water. The windmill had a big water tank on top, and when the wind was blowing, they tried to keep the tank filled full of water so that we'd always have water to drink and thank it. But sometimes the wind did not blow for a while, or there would be a leak in the tank or in the pipe or something, and we would have no water to drink from the wind. So the generator would have to be turned on to pump water so that we'd have water to drink and speak.
That's a shift up. Now the percentage of the crop that was grown was getting some runners, but besides that, were there any rules that the runners had to go by, or certain things they needed to do? Besides, I know they didn't take good animals, because the animals came back to y'all this morning, right?
Right.
So did they have, were there any rules that they had to?
There was probably some agreement about where the renter would pasture his cows, and probably how many he could have. And so the renter always had his own garden, his own well, and probably other patches for, like, for watermelons or peanuts or something like that. And to this day, I don't know what arrangement was made about firewood, because the renter had to have firewood, but I don't know whether the landowner provided the firewood or whether firewood had to be bought by the renter. I can't remember. Well, one of the things that I had a big problem with was going to a very small school. And the first through the fourth grade with only one teacher, and then going to a high school where there were many, many students, and riding a bus, there seemed to be some rule when I was growing up that if you lived within a mile of your school, you could not ride a bus. And I lived only a few blocks from my school, so it didn't bother me that much. But when I was in the fourth grade and ready to be promoted to the field, I had to change school. And at the time I changed to the high school, there were only two people in the fourth grade who went to the high school. I was one, and there was one boy. And riding the school bus was such a new experience, and the school was so big, that I was afraid I would get lost. But my big brother, who was going to school, said he would help me find my room once. So he took me to my room once, and he said, "From now on, you can find your own room." And I did all right until the bus stopped at a different door and caused me to get off in another hall, and I had a hard time finding my room back. And that year we had an unusually big crop, and I had to miss the first 2 weeks I went to school, the first day of school, so that the teacher would know I was coming. And then I missed 2 weeks, and when I went back, the teacher said, "I thought I was supposed to have enough students." And so it took me a few weeks to get caught up with my work. But to me, the most exciting thing in the world was catching the bus to go to school. I left to go to school, and I always cried if I hadn't missed the day out of school. And because if you missed the day out of school, at my house, there were only two things wrong. You were either sick, or you had to work. And to prove you weren't sick, you had to eat breakfast. If you could not eat breakfast, you were too sick to go to school. And if I couldn't go to school, I cried.
Now, how big was the high school compared to your elementary school?
At my small school, one teacher taught four grades. And when I went to high school, there was one teacher for every grade.
How many people that were in each class? Was there a lot of?
Yes, there were a lot. There might be 35, 40 students per class. A lot. When I was in 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, a lot of students did not go to school. You didn't have to go to school. Back then, they did not have a compulsion. And I know if there was an illness in the home, I know of one girl who only got to go to school through 6th grade because of a deformity and a child thing. She couldn't go to school regularly enough to make the grades, so she stopped when she was in 6th grade. And big families are small because of being on the farm, which kept out of school. And in the fall and in the winter, a lot of times, the schools would try to help the farmer by having half days of school. We'd go to school a little bit early in the morning, and all the classes would be jammed together. There'd be no study period, no PE, and we would not eat lunch. So that we could leave the school by 12 and rush home and grab a bite to eat and be in the field by 1 o'clock. And they might do this for 3 or maybe a month until the farmers caught up to their work. And this worked out well for the school because more students would stay in school, but still they'd have a half day, and it worked well.
Okay.